dass du bei einer neuen Folge von Happy Free Music mit dabei bist. Mein Name ist Anastasia Starostina und heute habe ich ein ganz tolles Interview-Special und zwar mit dem großartigen Pianisten Eric Ferrand Nkawa. Und zwar mit Eric werden wir über ganz viele verschiedene Themen sprechen, vor allem auch über diese Zusammenarbeit zwischen Musikern, auch was es bedeutet, Musiker zu sein, was es für, wie er auch seine Verbindung zur Musik gefunden hat und vieles andere. Und ja, ich würde sagen, wir starten gleich. Ich möchte aber gleich noch am Anfang dazu sagen, dass die Folge auf Englisch ist. Ich würde sagen, jetzt geht es los und viel Spaß beim Zuhören. It is so nice having you here. Thank you so much, dear Eric, for
My
being
pleasure.
Here in the podcast. Happy for Music.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Maybe just to start in the beginning, how are you today? How is Vienna doing for you?
Well, can you believe I am 60 now this year, and this is my first time in Vienna. So what kind of a classical musician am I?
Yeah.
I performed in Salzburg only once. It was a very long time ago at the Mirabelschloss, which was a nice place. But never been in Vienna, yeah.
Wow.
My first time, of course, it's very impressive. I suppose that, for me, Vienna has to be snowy, and,
you know. Yeah, but now we have 30 degrees, so.
Yes, it's very different. And but still, you know, all those prestigious capitals have the reflection of the glory, of the all the glorious musicians who have been performing here and creating wonderful works that we still perform today.
Wow,
so,
that's true.
Yeah, for us it's legendary. We don't see the city, the architecture the way it is, but through the eyes of trying to imagine what, I mean, how the whole city could resonate, could let the great music from the great musicians resonate, and of course we don't know what the great musicians of the past could hear, but we can see what they saw.
Yeah,
that's
amazing, right?
That's amazing. Yeah.
So thank you so much for being here, and I just want also to start with also one question I'm asking all the time in the beginning. I have some kind of questions in the beginning and in the end, and one of these questions in the beginning is, if you would if you should describe yourself in just three words, what would those three words be?
I'm not sure it would be an artist. I think being a musician is already very ambitious.
That's true. Absolutely, yeah.
So, just a pianist who wants to see a little beyond that, beyond the material side of things.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Wow. So, I mean, it's not three, but
it's not three.
But it's very beautiful.
Well, thank you. I never thought about that.
But now, here is everything. Here is a new beginning, right?
It is. Well, what I said before about Vienna and the past is one thing, but I'm really struck by the creativity here and also meeting you people, because you're so up to date with. Modern communication technologies, that I'm really surprised by all that and trying to learn also.
So, like 3 days or 4 days of Vienna with opening new doors, right?
I guess so, yes.
So beautiful. Yeah, let's maybe go more into your journey as a musician. So you, for those who don't know you, you have said it already, you're a pianist. Mm-hmm. And you have a long journey ahead, or you had a long journey until now. And maybe tell us about this journey, becoming a pianist, and what inspired you to pursue this path?
Well, you know, in France, people speak about vocation. I don't know if this is a this is a word that you can use that way in English. And in fact, it was never like this for me. I was attracted by many things. I always felt like this, except that I started music. I mean, studying music at quite a young age, and every step would ask for another step further. You know, thanks to the structure of musical education that we had in my country and in France, and so at a very young age, I entered the Paris Conservatory, and I also ended with the piano classes up there. After that, I had I followed a professional cycle, so I was around 15, 16, and I could meet a few interesting teachers that came from abroad, like Georgi Sebak. Who was there? Nikita Magalov. Mm-hmm. And of course... I had a very classical training. Maybe I didn't emphasize enough about, you know, harmony and studying the structure of music as deeply as it has to be done, but also had to follow some general education classes, you know. Well, after that, I always doubted about, you know, you have some, during certain periods you have some megalomania, and in other periods you wonder, am I really doing this right, or am I completely, completely wrong, you know? So this is a kind of eternal quest, you know, trying to play the music of the great masters. You're trying to understand their intentions.
That's of course. Yeah.
You can understand. You can have an insight of that through tradition, or through what your teachers would teach you. But I think there was a great pianist, I think it was Edwin Fischer or maybe Arthur Schnabel, who said that tradition is just a collection of bad habits. Mm-hmm. So you have also to be very careful with all that. And one day you take this course and you say, so finally this course is my main clue to the intention of the composer. So let's try to really read it, and what does it mean, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So this is a great quest, and it changes with every author, every composer, you know.
Mm.
Because music is an international language, in a way, but it's also very personal. And if one day you start working with a living composer, you start to understand that it's almost not possible to write down everything.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the most important part is not written down, or you have to guess it through what's written down.
Yeah,
and you guess it your way, of course, because you are what you are.
Absolutely,
I couldn't say what I am in three words, but I am probably something, and I read with my. With my sensitivity, my nervous system, and my education.
Wow, beautiful. And what can I? I wanted to ask it kind of this way. What inspired you? Like, really? Like, was it someone? Was it a person, was it a pianist you have seen in your childhood where you was like, oh, I want to be him or her, or I don't know, or was it, was it like you just fell in love with the instrument or the music you have heard, or what was like the thing where you said that's going to be the path?
Well, I guess I used to sing some popular songs when I was a very little child, and I think I had I had a nice voice probably, but once I started having a contact with that instrument, maybe my mother says that suddenly I felt that this thing would sing better than me, so I stopped singing.
And then you started singing with this one.
maybe. And then I started with a teacher that that gave me some you know, some easy versions of serious and famous works. And I was around six, I think, and she probably gave me very bad habits, but I almost immediately hated the pieces for children. I wanted to play some great works, you know, to see. And of course, but I had no clue, of course. And then when I was seven, I was still in Grenoble, which is my hometown, so it's in the French Alps. And there in the conservatory was a woman that came from another age. She was born in 1899 and had played for Saint-Saëns and Busoni and people like this, like that. And she was around 70 and at that time. And she started to do things a little more seriously with me. She was horrified because I was doing, you know, simple versions of Chopin preludes and everything in C major. And I immediately fell in love with her and her playing. She was very tough. Huh? She was not kind of maternal behaving old lady, a teacher. Not at all. She was tough. But I also immediately understood that there was something serious
going on.
And then she took me in her class in Grenoble, and in a few years, you know, things started to work out. And then we had to think about going to the Paris Conservatory. I entered at a very young age. I was not even 12. Ended at 14. And then with the piano, first prize in piano, and then chamber music, and then the third cycle, which was the cycle where we had some teachers from abroad, which was very interesting. And I used to have Pierre Sancan then, who was a very interesting teacher and very, very warm and also a composer, a very interesting man.
Wow.
And then I studied a few months with Enrique Barenboim, who was Daniel Barenboim's father, because I met him in London, and he told me, I have to come to Israel and study with me. It was very interesting at the beginning, but very shortly after, it turned out to be very tough. And in fact, I would say now that he taught me everything that you should never do, which is conceptualizing things and applying theories, mental theories to what you're doing. And in fact, I think it destroyed most of the natural things that I was doing, and I didn't know how I was doing them. So after a few months, I stopped that, and and then I started making my own mistakes. Mm-hmm. As I was 18 at that time, and well, you know, I had several periods in my life where I I mean, in my childhood, we tried to save the time and be efficient and do. We were doing all the travels to Paris with my mother, studying in the train and. Was all that, and then after that, you know, there was all that period. I went to the army too, which was quite ridiculous, but I still did it. And there were different periods. Then I went to a competition. There was the Clara Haskell. I was a finalist. They only gave one prize. Unfortunately, I didn't get it, but I was 17. Some people liked me there. And it was still quite a musical competition, I would say. In Vevey, you know, it's yeah. Montreux-Vevey. Yeah.
In Switzerland. Beautiful.
And Clara Haskell was a great Romanian pianist. So musical. So, and she's part of the legend now, you know. And then I went to Santander, who was another international competition. Didn't go to the very last stage, but I got a prize. I was a prize winner, and someone from Japan noticed me and then invited me to a festival, which in the 80s was not so common. You know, you could fly to Japan. And so I started doing things up there. Also, I met some people from the traditional arts, and I became friends with a gentleman who is one of the masters of the No Theater. And 5 years ago, after 40 years of friendship, we finally managed to do a performance together. It was my first insight to being on stage, something a little different than the piano. I was supposed to be the ghost of a dead pianist.
Damn. Okay.
Yeah, because
that's a fun fact again about you. Because we were talking before the podcast interview about fun facts about some nicknames you have.
Oh, the nicknames, yes, because my name is Eric Ferrand Nkawa. In fact, the actual name is Nkawa. I just added my mother's name, which is Ferrand, because there are some other pianists named Nkawa. And so most of the time I use my initials, which are EF and K. But I have an American friend, a jazz pianist, who likes to call me E-Funk. And I really enjoy it.
How would that be to write the podcast description? Yeah, meet E-Funk.
Why not? Except if you say that you give a Schumann recital and it's by E-Funk, people don't take you seriously. So it's. But maybe it will change. Why not?
We can try to break these rules, right?
Yeah, speaking of
we're
that.
We're the rockers of classical music.
Yes, and I notice now that there are so many young people who have wonderful education and different styles. They are able to. You know, when I was at the Paris Conservatoire at the end of the 70s, there was no jazz class. Damn. I would probably have attended that.
Wow.
Yeah, because I was already attracted by some old records by Fats Waller, you know, and then Oscar Peterson, and then Art Tatum, and all those people. I was trying. Sometimes I would try to play what they played, but I had no idea of improvisation and making arrangements and things.
And that is, I mean, I'm telling always also some students of mine, it is hard when you're like tending more to classical music and then want to go to jazz. It's always harder to go from classical music to jazz than from jazz to classical music, right?
I don't know.
Because as a classical musician, you're like, you read the pages, you're doing reading. How do I say? Well, side reading, and you're like, you are really fixed to that what a composer has written. But in jazz, it's like very, you need to know a lot about the harmonies and disharmonies and the keys and the, what you also need to know in classical music, right? But you...
Yeah, but in both disciplines, you need to hear
yeah.
and listen.
Yes.
Listen, really
and
listen. And feel. And
feel.
And I think now we are facing a problem, a listening problem. I think people are trained to hear and identify things and analyze, but sometimes I guess I can feel that some people play without really hearing before what they are playing, and which is really possible with the piano because the tuning is already done by someone else. You don't have to. You don't have to worry about the tuning too much, so you don't have to look for intonation. But you should, in a way, you should feel the links between tones, you know. And I think it's important.
That's for me actually a very good advice you're giving me as a hobby pianist. But so you mean between the notes? Like
yeah.
really before I'm actually
yes I think of course you could just read a note, play it and be charmed by what you hear and you're discovering the piece. But especially when you play by memory, you have to remember what you have to do, but mainly you have to imagine something and then it comes through you. I mean, let it come through you and through the instrument. Of course, it's a kind of machine. No? It's not as direct as singing or playing the violin or the clarinet, but still, I think maybe the instrument has to disappear in a way. Mm-hmm. For example, sometimes if I'm invited to, in a jury. I can listen to several contestants who play either play well or not that well, but they play with the instrument sound. And suddenly someone comes and could make some mistakes or not, and plays with his sound or her sound, and you can notice
exactly.
that immediately.
That's
so, yeah. And it's hard to analyze. I don't really know how this happens, but this is true. And in fact, I'm not very fond of the real sound of the instrument. You know what's interesting is what someone is telling through the instrument.
That is going to be a quote. I'm taking out of this. This is actually a wow.
No, but
that is important to say. That's
yeah, I mean,
so
there is a quest about making some more powerful instruments, more with more harmonics,
yes,
purer and purer and more efficient.
Thank you so
much. And some pianists would say, "Oh, that piano projects better than the other." I say, okay, but what do you do with that? And
yes.
Of course, starting to record and getting into the recording industry teaches you also that the microphone doesn't always hear that way. But the microphone is very objective, and if something is bothering in the sound, you have to get rid of it. You have to try to tame it. But our brain, when we listen to someone live, our brains don't really function that way, I think. And the, for example, you could listen to someone even from a bad seat in a hall and still enjoy the concert because you're connected with what the person is trying to say musically.
Wow. That is true. That is absolute. And this is what I think so many people are not... And so many pianists and young pianists are not understanding. Because I also figured that pianists alike, they need to adapt all the time to the instrument standing in front of them.
Yes, it's
like
a problem.
Always, it's like a violinist has always his violin with him or him, her. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they know what they're playing. They're very close to the instrument. They're very close to the sound. They're like a cellist is hugging the instrument somehow. So they're very with the instrument. But what we are doing, I mean you, but is you're just touching with a little bit with your foot and a little bit with your fingertips. That's all. You just have this kind of distance, and you need to trust everything. You need to trust the hall, you need to trust the people who are tuning, who are invoicing, the mechanic, the technician.
When you start giving concerts, it's nice to have a good partnership with a real piano technician.
Sure, yeah, because
and
it's so
someone
important.
Who is able to translate your obsessions and your
yes,
and
well,
your
tuning.
And your fears to your legitimate observations into efficient technical decisions.
Yes.
And make it.
Yes.
For example, very often I was discussing that with the man who works here as a piano technician, as a very good one. And I'm struck by sometimes even on some concert piano, brand new concert piano that cost thousands of dollars. And sometimes a very basic thing, like the aftertouch, you know,
mm-hmm.
Being able to play at half the length, half the depth of the key, which is useful not only for repeated notes and things like that, but also for controlling the sound in the depth of the key. I don't know how to explain that.
Yeah,
the depth of the keyboard.
Would be a good point to all. I mean, it's kind of hard to show, right? Yeah, okay, it's kind of hard.
No,
to
but
explain.
It's easy. I don't know if people had. I mean, if Franz Schubert could do it on the pianos of his time, but now with modern pianos, I'm talking about pianos from 1880.
Mm-hmm.
See, they're so powerful with their iron frame and all that. So,
then we need to go to the piano now.
Yeah.
We're actually here in the Via Piano and Art Center studio, and we are going now to the grand piano, which is close and next to our table. So
let's say something that comes to my mind, like the famous lead by Franz Schubert, and Die Musik. If I have to depress the keys up to the top, like on a vertical piano, I would repeat those chords like this. Which is fine, but it's difficult to have a mellow tone. And maybe I can try doing this at half the depth of the key the key travel. You see, otherwise it would be like a typewriter. It would be, well, I can even with the pedal, but I could never play soft enough unless I do it halfway.
different.
Yeah,
it's
and
completely
if
different.
And if the piano is not adjusted for that, if the action is not adjusted, you can't do it. And sometimes it happens even on some very expensive pianos.
Wow.
Yeah. Or this by Schumann. If you play with your singer, for example, and you have to play that. So. Yeah, but it happens all the time. This is something I learned with. We were doing that at a very, very young age, you know. And sometimes I wonder if people are really taught about all the possibilities we have with the sound, which are, for example, this morning I'm tired, I'm tense, I don't know. It's hard for me also to get it, but I know it's possible.
Yeah.
It's possible if you relax enough and your body and your mind are in peace and are ready for that, you can do amazing things even with an old piano.
Wow, this is amazing. I think actually I have like 15 questions, I guess, but I think this conversation, it's like. It's so important for all the listeners now, and it's so beautiful how we're, talking about the things very with intuition. It's like coming, and it's like, and I love it. And I need to say that I feel that you're also very, you have a very high sensitivity and intention, like not intention, maybe also intentions, but also the intuition, which guides you also through your music and how you're showing it and how you go with it.
Yeah.
You feel it.
Probably. I mean, reflection is something, but you need to have. Technical and musical
as well.
Knowledge, because as the great Bill Evans would say, intuition doesn't have to be out there and on its own.
Of course,
but
it's together, like a tart with a lot of pieces, right?
Yeah. And when you, well, now we are getting to the point of sharing the music with some other musicians also, and well, sometimes you meet some people and you can feel that you will probably make some good music with them because you have the same way of seeing things, or you have something that completes, that is a good good complement to what they are, and you could be a support and they can be a little different, you know. What matters is it to have the same aim, you see?
Yeah.
And share the same views.
And that's what actually that is a very leads me to the question I also wanted to ask you, because you are saying that you need to go in with another musician, playing with another musician, for example, you need to go into the same direction, you need to know what you're aiming for. I mean, so let's talk about this, because you're also playing a lot together with other musicians, also with Gilles. We met Gilles, we have had him here also in the podcast, and we had a beautiful video session and shooting with you here in our center, and we talked about 2 days ago about this strong connection between you guys, but also between musicians, and because there are also some listeners who are professional musicians or going to be professional musicians, so. Maybe you can tell us give us some tips, what it is important when you are playing together, when you're accompanying, when you're doing shootings together, when you work together, when you when you're like, what kind of advice or what advice would you give now to young musicians who are going to play in trios, quartets, or duos or something?
Well, I would say what's important is each of us has to have a conscience, a consciousness of the whole thing. What's terrible in chamber music, that's the very basic step, is when everyone wants to be heard, and to play louder to be heard. For example, you can learn that when you play piano duet. You know, in the 19th century or even beginning of the 20th century, many people used to play four hands, and there were all those old editions of famous symphonies for four hands. But playing four hands is very difficult because the one who plays the lower part has to take care of the pedal. So how are the harmonies are linked together, or how the music has to breathe. And especially with with so-called modern pianos, they have all these huge basses, and it's very difficult not to cover the upper part.
So again, listen, really.
So you need to listen, and you need to learn how to be part of the harmony, and to give a ground to things and give also a baseline. But it has to flow. It has to also, you know, to go ahead. And so that's a good start, I think, for starting learning how to be part of something. Well, you know, in this part of Europe, people know that. I mean, there are still many people who play chamber music and orchestral music. Still, sometimes, even with some very good orchestras, I have as I told you the other day, sometimes I have the impression that people play simultaneously, but they don't play together. I mean that they have a very good mathematic way of playing of playing at the same time, but they don't really share the sound and the music. I think to get to that urge, everyone has to have a little kernel of what the others are doing, and also a certain knowledge of the score. For example, if you play with a violinist, it's interesting to play your left hand and sing his part. You don't play your right hand, but you play all the basses, or you play some chords, depends on how the score is built up. But you really need to know in advance what he or she is doing to do and to play. And sometimes if you are good friends with your partner, you can ask him or her to do the same and play your part. Because it would be interesting for him or her to be aware of what the poor pianist is trying to do. You know?
Sure.
Because those guys, you know, very often in violin classes, they don't have the remote idea of how sounds are related to harmony and to a bass, for example.
Sure.
And it changes everything.
Yeah.
Wow. This and rhythmical education that we don't get enough in classical music, I think. And this comes from other types of music.
Wow. Beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing this very precious and treasury advices, because I think, for example, my goal is to play someday with Alexei more duos, and to be a part, to guide him, to help him to have some small concerts here, because I think I am at that level. I just need to practice more, but I think there are some things I need to learn before, like how I can't be an accompanist and how.
Well, listen and prepare yourself to what you are going to listen when you play with your partner. And so you could anticipate and feel when, because you know, you make three takes of the same piece and you don't play the same.
Yeah.
So it's always a little different.
It's always a little different.
At the beginning of our conversation, you said that violinists have this advantage of playing with their own instrument, which is true. But even them, when they go to different hall, the feedback is very different. Playing for a rehearsal in an empty hall, playing in a full hall, also very different.
Sure.
And also you are different because your heartbeat is not the same.
Sure, that's
yes. And you find yourself like being someone that you didn't know.
Hands are sweaty and you need to glide on this plastic keys.
Yes, you've got the sweating hands type, and you have all people like me who have cold hands. But you should that's in French we call that le trac, and they say the stress. This is not about stress.
Funk and le trac. These are the cool words we take.
But
out.
Le trac, I mean, even even physicians would tell you that it comes from our prehistorical background. You know.
Sure. You mean is it this anxiousness before going on stage?
Yeah, I mean anxiousness about your life or your future is something else, but anxiousness about an important moment is natural.
Absolutely.
Because you get more focused. I mean, it shouldn't go to the point where it becomes fear.
Yeah.
But if you are prepared, it's le trac and it's natural.
Yeah.
And there was this legendary actress, Sarah Bernhardt, who was from the 19th century, and so she was performing in France, and a young actress came to her and said, "You know, I never feel le trac. I never feel stressed." And she said, "It will come when you get some talent."
Wow. Okay.
so don't be afraid if you have le trac. It's natural, and it can even help you focus a little better.
Better. Wow.
It comes from our prehistorical background, because when you were threatened by a beast or by a bear or something, you needed to appeal to all your resources.
Sure.
And so that's it.
Thank you so much for that. Now, I wanted to ask you, I would like to say now, it would be a beautiful moment maybe for things to show again. Where I can say okay, in the show notes they will find your link and so on. So thank you so much for this beautiful input about le trac. I will definitely take a lot of that also for myself and also my students. And I would say now is a wonderful moment to get into Eric's music. I mean, he's going to play something from Debussy. I will actually, that is a very important point to tell you guys. I will put in the show notes some links about Eric, where you can visit his website, visit him on YouTube, so you can listen to his beautiful, beautiful music he's playing. He's, for me, one of the beautifulest pianists and absolutely amazing. So, really, it's absolutely amazing listening to you and hearing you. It's absolutely beautiful. So, guys, this is actually a premiere. We haven't had this moment ever in the podcast that we have live music here in the studio. So, welcome to Eric. Thank you. so, so much.
Music, yeah?
This is absolutely, I love this piece so much. Right. I love this piece so, so much. And actually, this was, I just need to get inside again myself. I lost myself.
I'm sorry, I missed the bass at an important moment, but
no, no one, I think, has heard it. It was absolutely beautiful. Thank you so much.
You see, so it's not about focusing too much about what. I mean, of course, you have to listen to what comes out of the piano, but also what you have in your heart, you know. And because otherwise you would lose the impulse and the wish to go further.
Wow, that is, I think, absolutely true. So beautiful, and I'm so thankful and grateful for this beautiful premiere and moment, and that you are sharing this premiere with me here on the podcast live. It's absolutely my pleasure, amazing.
I could notice here that this is a place where musicians can be listened to the way they deserve it, and this is also a very important point, is that music could be good, but maybe if you're a recording artist, you don't know for whom you're playing. But if you play for people, I mean, most of the time you play for people. And if the people don't do their part, you play alone, and it's sad.
That is, yeah, a good fact.
Yes, and I think the audience is part of the music.
The audience,
the listener.
Yes.
Whatever, it's one person or 10,000, it's the same. I mean, it's not the same, but...
but
but still, you have to give something to someone. And it's sure. It's very helpful to know that you... It's like in a conversation. If you speak by yourself, you probably won't say anything really valuable. So that's why you pushed me into those confidential aspects of our lives as musicians.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's what it's about here, of course, in the podcast, but especially what is important for me as also a consultant, a psychological consultant for musicians, to really listen to them and help them. And I mean, musicians, they have crises, they have problems as normal people, I would say, like people who are not musicians also have. And I think it's a very very important thing, because musicians have other crises, other problems someone can never understand. It's like, I mean, we could dive into this topic, and I think my listeners have heard about it.
This is endless.
But actually, we're coming to our last question. And the last question of my podcast is a question I always ask. Have you heard it from Jill? I hope he hadn't tell you about this last question. I hope you haven't heard.
No, I haven't.
Okay, fantastic. Or also from other interviews, but that's even better if you do not know this question, because it's one of my favorite ones. So imagine you're meeting now your 90-year-old self. He's coming to you, maybe give you a hug, maybe greet you. He's literally here now. And he's just here for the moment to give you one advice for your life now.
I guess I'll tell you that within 30 years.
I mean, of course, but this is kind of an imaginary question. What do you think would be an advice he gives you from... He already lived this 30 years.
Well, I think you follow your intuitions and don't lose time with... trying to succeed and like the others, or try to find your own points of interest and and get deeper into them.
Wow. And that is why I love this question. Because every time, it's so powerful.
Is it
so powerful, because you, every time everyone says something completely different. But that's the interesting part, to get so much out of this one question. So yeah, I'm always also inviting the listeners to also ask themselves this question sometime.
Yeah, I'd just like to make a short flashback about what we were saying about the beginning of our conversation.
Sure.
So I was telling you about my first great teacher, who was Madeleine de Valmalette, who was born in 1899 and lived 100 years, in fact. And I will always admire her and enjoy her playing, which was illuminating. She had something special. It's not about technique, and she had a wonderful technique. And then 15 years ago, I was lucky enough to meet a legend of jazz piano, and his name is Martial Solal. Martial Solal is now 97, so he doesn't play anymore, but he's been playing until a very, very old age, and he's probably the greatest living improviser. And he has known the bebop era, but also at a very early age developed his own style. And so now he was born in 1927, and he's also a great composer of written music. And I've been lucky enough to record some of his music, his etudes and preludes, which are published by Salabert and Businhogs. And he told me, you know, you're 60, and I think this is the best 10 years of a pianist's life, because between 60 and 70, you have the mastery and you still have the strength. So enjoy it.
Wow.
So I'll try to follow that advice.
To really enjoy it,
take advantage of it, and do everything you can. So I'm trying to play his concertos and things, and I'm not a jazz pianist, but I've been influenced by the articulation, the way of pronouncing music and feeling it, and it's also helping me in certain aspects of classical music playing.
Mm. Wow. Thank you so much, dear Eric. Really, this is so powerful, everything you have said in this conversation.
Is it?
It is really, and I'm so looking forward to when this beautiful interview is for everyone here. I mean, you will hear it, and you're hearing it actually now. What I'm telling. But
okay, so do you want a last piece for the ending or something?
I never can say no to beautiful music of yours.
Sure. Maybe,
yeah. Please.
Oh, it's a small. It's been ages since I didn't play that. Why does it come to my mind this morning? I don't know. It's a small impromptu by Gabriel Fauré. I think it was written in 1880-something.
Thank you.
love it! Eric! Bravo! Wow, what an interview!
To play on this piano. That's me. I'm nervous. I'm tired, but still.
And I am just amazed how you brought this beautiful sound of this grand. But this is amazing. Thank you so much.
Well, if I spent a few hours on it, I could do something.
I think this is going to be amazing. That's true.
Yeah, it's good.
Thank you so much, dear Eric, for this interview.
Thank you. You are the person to whom people are happy to talk.
Aww.
And that's not very common for people like me.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
It's not only about you being a beautiful woman.
Oh, okay. Now I'm really flattered.
No, but I mean it's not. It's not only that. It's not only that. It's your human quality, which is something.
Thank you so much. Also, das war jetzt das Interview mit Eric. Ich hoffe, es hat euch gefallen. Ich hoffe, ihr konntet euch viel mitnehmen von dieser Folge. Also ich auf jeden Fall. Das war Wahnsinn, ihn zu erleben hier im Studio. Und dann noch dazu die Premiere, dass er hier live im Podcast gespielt hat. Es war einfach unglaublich. Ich fand es so witzig, wie er am Ende dann auch noch gesagt hat, ich spiele noch zum Schluss ein paar Noten. Und dann hat er da einfach abgeliefert. Das war unglaublich. Also, ja, ich bin sehr, sehr dankbar. Mein Herz ist voll. Ich bin total inspiriert. Am liebsten würde ich mich jetzt auch gleich zum Klavier setzen und üben und spielen, weil das war einfach unglaublich. Ja, also schreibt mir auf jeden Fall gerne auf Instagram unter nastia.music.health, wie ihr diese Podcast-Folge gefunden habt. Gerne lasst eine Bewertung hier, schreibt mir gerne, lasst mich wissen, wie es für euch war. Und ich werde hier, wie versprochen, in die Shownotes ein paar Infos über Eric hinterlassen, dass ihr einfach da auch ihn nochmal einfach besuchen könnt, schauen könnt, was er so macht, wo er sich denn so rumtreibt. Und ja, ich würde sagen, meine Lieben, danke fürs Zuhören, alles, alles Liebe und bis ganz bald, eure Nastia.